And this quarantine situation is going to be difficult. It's going to be a war of attrition to a huge degree from a mental standpoint. And we want to be the team that's most well suited to take advantage of that. We've had multiple players test positive the very first day. We've had none since. And we are dealing with those as we go along.
Can you say how many?
Three.
Welcome to The Jump. That was Pelicans Executive Vice President David Griffin talking about the Pelicans' positive tests. I'm Rachel Nichols. Today I am joined by New York Times bestseller Brian Windhorst and the 2008 Finals MVP, Mr. Paul Pierce. Coming up, guys, we're going to talk about James Harden. He's lost some weight during this NBA hiatus. Will it make a difference come playoff time? Our new segment, Previously On, is coming later in the show, and we'll be focusing on the Rockets. But first, you heard Griff talking about the Pelicans testing, and our Adrian Wojnarowski reports that the Denver Nuggets have had their practice facility closed since Saturday after they had a round of positive tests for the coronavirus. Sources told Woj that the Nuggets have had at least one more positive test since then. So, Paul, how concerning is this development just 1 month away from the NBA restarting?
Man, this is very concerning. You got to expect that there's going to be more cases. I mean, we're hearing more and more each and every day, each and every week. And then for the Denver Nuggets not being able to use the practice facility to get practice time in, to develop that chemistry back again, you got key players sitting out. You talk about a team that was number three in the Western Conference who probably had championship aspirations. I mean, they finished in the top the last few years. The superstar, Jokic, he got in better shape during all of this. It's a huge concern. I mean, I'm telling you, Rach, there's going to be a major asterisk on this year's champ if key players have to sit out to the virus, if, you know, it's going to affect certain games regarding to seeding, if it's going to affect certain games in the playoffs, so where you have a guy that goes into quarantine for a week or two. This is a big concern for me.
Yeah, and remember, Jokic is still overseas. He doesn't compute into this testing as he is over in Serbia having tested positive. And I think it's pretty clear that there are significantly more than 16 players that have tested positive already. And the league hasn't made any comment, Rach, about the coaches or the staff. They announced the test for the players, but if 5% of the players tested and positive, and we now know about other folks who've tested positive, you have to figure that some coaches and staff members are also positive. And, you know, there are a number of guys who fit into a risk profile that may get flagged by the doctors overseeing this. And they could theoretically, according to the rules set by the NBA, be barred. And we haven't heard anything about this yet. David Griffin also said that, you know, Alvin Gentry hadn't been cleared yet. They're supposed to turn the lists in tomorrow of the 35 players that they're sending down to Florida.
People.
It's supposed to be an ironclad list.
Including the coaches.
35 people, sorry.
Yeah.
The 35 people, including the coaches, and yet we still don't happen to know if all the coaches have been cleared yet. So this is very delicate, and I feel like there's stuff simmering under the surface here that whether the league wants to admit it or not is going to become public soon enough.
Well, look, I am concerned only in that there are more positive cases of this across the country than we ever expected at this point, and that is a huge concern. And it makes sense to me that if you have players and coaches in this environment where all across America, it's like the water is being turned up to boil, they are going to be feeling the heat. I think that the NBA allowed for all of this in its ramp-up schedule. The idea was to get these players back at this point, to get them tested every other day, to start weeding out who needed to go into isolation and who didn't, and to also, I think, make it a little bit more clear to players how serious it is that in these days leading up to the plane to Orlando, that they have to isolate. That even if they're one of the ones who don't test positive, they can't be the ones who go out to the grocery store. They can't go hang out with their friends. And then the idea is that all of these positive tests, if the players recover at the rate that they expect generally healthy young men to do, they would be healthier going into Orlando. But that is all based, as you say, Brian, on a bunch of different suppositions. And we don't know if those are going to come true, just like we don't know about anything in this country going forward a month or so. I want to read you guys something Adam Silver said just this morning. This was part of the Time 100 series. And he was saying, hey, it's never, quote, full steam ahead no matter what. He was asked, is there a point you guys would shut all of this down? He added, certainly if we had a lot of cases, he said, we are going to stop. He said, you cannot run from this virus. I am absolutely convinced, though, he added, that it will be safer on this campus because there aren't many situations in the country, he said, I'm aware of, where there is mass testing of asymptomatic employees. So it seems like from that quote that Adam Silver is saying there is a situation out there that would make us stop. He said that we're not at it yet, and he does think once they can get all these guys into the campus, they will be in a safer environment. Of course, they have to get there. And speaking of practice facilities, the Nets practice facility was closed also. It reopened today after being closed, sources told Woj. The Nets also had two players, Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan, saying that they have tested positive for COVID-19. Now, Jordan has already said that testing positive, that's enough for him. He is opting out of Orlando, while Dinwiddie tweeted that he wants to play, but he is going to have to wait and make a decision after he sees how he recovers because he said he has had some symptoms. Either way, the loss of DJ, one more hit for Brooklyn, which is already without KD and Kyrie due to injury. Wilson Chandler, who opted out for family reasons. So, Brian, how should a guy like Joe Harris, who is an unrestricted free agent, if he gets injured, could be putting his future in jeopardy, or Caris LeVert, who has a significant injury history, how should they handle going forward?
Well, I guess they, if they're going to look at it from a basketball standpoint, and I guess, please excuse me, we'll talk about basketball. It's a great opportunity for them because it's a great opportunity for Joe Harris and expected to be a tight market to increase his value. And if you're the Nets, it's a great opportunity for Caris LeVert and Jared Allen to step forward here. And looking on a macro scale, I mean, Kyrie Irving kind of let the cat out of the bag a few months ago when he hinted that the team needs to make a major trade. And when you talk to executives around the league, they think that if they wanted to upgrade from Durant and Kyrie to add a third big-time star, that it would take LeVert and Allen to do so. And so now they have a carpet rolled out for them. But, you know, it's hard to focus on that right now. Maybe it will be easier after everybody gets in, as you mentioned, and basketball becomes the focus. But that is an opportunity. There is a silver lining to this if you want to look at it that way.
Hmm. Yeah, I think so too. But hold on, look, you don't have Kyrie, you don't have KD. They're out for the year. You know, you lose your core players in Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan. So you have to look at this. If you're the Nets, you're looking at this as an evaluation period. You know, they probably weren't going to win in the playoffs anyway with the group that they're bringing out there. So you use this time in these eight games and possibly the playoffs if they, you know, are able to stay in the playoff mix to evaluate players, to bring up their value, like you said. So, you know, this could be writing on the wall. Maybe these guys shouldn't come. This is a great opportunity for the Nets, like I said, to improve their stock, you know, see who they're going to keep going into the summer, who they're going to trade and moving forward. So, you know, it's a win-win for the Nets.
Well, we'll see. I mean, we just showed the video of the guys dancing on the bench. It's going to be very lonely soon. It's going to be like one guy dancing a jig by himself. It's going to be very sad. With all these questions surrounding the Nets roster, it prompts an interesting discussion about ninth place in the East, right? The Wizards. Coming into all this, the math did not give Washington much of a chance to even reach a play-in game, much less the actual playoffs. But now, well, they'll still be without John Wall, who is still injured, and Davis Bertans, who is opting out. But Bradley Beal is going. And take a look. The Wizards are only 6 games back of the Nets, only 5.5 games behind the Magic in the East, and you only need to be within 4 games of the 8th spot to trigger a play-in game. So, Paul, do you think the door is opening up for the Wizards?
I don't think so. I mean, barring the circumstances, like you said, no John Wall, no Bertan, the Wizards are climbing Mount Everest. You know, I mean, like they're in an evaluation period themselves. You know, Bradley Beal, he's going to go out there and put up big numbers, but to be 6 games out, and I know they have to be within 4, only 8 games to play. Like I said, I think they're climbing Mount Everest. It's an evaluation period. I think they're out.
Man, crushing the Wizards' hopes and dreams,
not
Brian.
So fast, my friend.
Thank you.
Not so fast. I think the Wizards got a shot here. And because they only have to get to 4 games back, and we're going to find out pretty quick. Right out of the gate, these two teams play each other the second game. The Nets come out and they play the team directly behind them, Orlando first, and then Washington second. If they split those games, or they win them both, I think, okay, Bradley Beal can start looking at maybe taking some time off. But if they lose those games and the Wizards come in and beat the Nets and maybe get, you know, in their head that they could beat them in a play-in series, I think it gets interesting. And I also think once these guys get to this bubble, it's going to go one of two ways. They're either going to get invested in this or they're not. And if the Wizards can get invested in this, They're going to focus on it, and they're going to get going. And that is my expectation. We're going to find out fast. And the early schedule, you didn't think Nets Magic or Nets Wizards is going to be a big game. Guess what? It is. It will be an important game.
Yeah, I mean, look, remember the way Washington has worked this whole season. The offense has been spectacular. The defense has been spectacularly bad. So we'll have to see what happens there. Coming up, we will discuss Sean Bradley because he got drafted on this date in NBA history. And our producers have put together the top five poster dunks on him. All in good fun, though, of course. And also, here's what the jump recommends for today. Our Brian Windhorst penned a piece on 2010 free agency and the high-stakes moves that led to the formation of the Heatles. We will discuss that next. But first, with 1 month left until the season, we're counting down the top plays of the season. And this is number 30 with 30 days. Take a look.
Allen out high. Kurucs one-on-one with Beasley. Oh, nice pass.
Oh, gracious. Jared Allen. That's a man's jam. The full extension for the throw.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, poor Mike Muscala. I've seen people go to jail for less than this. Oh, my gracious.
Gotta be Iverson with the handle. Gotta get hot or get left in the spur of the moment.
The basketball tournament is back this year with a fully quarantined 24-team single elimination bracket played over 10 days in Columbus, Ohio. With a $1 million winner-take-all first prize, the games begin Saturday 3 Eastern on ESPN and the app. All right, guys, on this date in 1993, Sean Bradley was taken number 2 overall in the draft by the Sixers. He was dunked on after that more than any other player ever. I mean, probably. We don't keep these stats. But look, here he is dunking on Tony Kukoc. We wanted to give him some love before running back the top five best ever dunks on Sean Bradley. Check it out.
8:35 to go on this one. Robert back with another. Oh, my goodness. What a game he's having. The guy was sitting down for about 4 or 5 games. He's come back with a vengeance over the last 2.
The average. Bowie out in front. Down the middle goes Jones.
Oh, another slam dunk over Bradley. The place is going crazy. He lifted like a helicopter. But he came down like a snowflake. Look in front of the Laker bench. Get a picture of the bench. Get a picture of the bench. There they are.
AB brings it up. Stutter step finds the big fella. Bradley could not stop it. One of those dunks that you worry about the kid breaking his
heart. Yeah, you better get out of the way. And Bradley, he's a smart player.
Mavericks are right back in it, down by only 2.
Nice comeback by Dallas.
Oh, man, Kevin Garnett with a major league dunk.
Major league? What's the next step? What's above major league?
As high as it gets.
14th in points allowed, 8th in field goal defense. And that says a lot. Here comes McCready. Oh, he just shook the gravity right out of the building. What a play by T-Man.
How about the passion? Look at the animation on Tracy McGrady. Normally sleepy-eyed, very smooth. You don't see this kind of energy and passion.
You know, I mean, there you go. Bradley listed at 7'6" tall. Luckily for us, we have someone on our set who once dunked on Sean Bradley. Paul, what was it like to dunk on someone so tall?
Listen, I got to constantly remind this new generation I had bounce. So Sean Bradley was the tallest guy in the NBA. I was consistently dunking on centers. You know, people remember the 2008 and beyond Paul Pierce. But I really had an athletic game before then. So, you know, I'm glad that we're able to bring this back just to show this new generation. I was dunking on these big centers back then.
See, Brian, I've been feeling guilty all day about showing this clip reel in honor of Sean being drafted number 2 overall. And Paul's making me feel better. It's really an honor of Paul.
I got some posters out
there.
Hey, listen, you just gotta look them up.
Paul Pierce could ball.
No question. Brian, I want to move on to you because you wrote a piece recapping a crazy 3 days in July of 2010 that led to the formation of the Heatles. You mentioned that this union almost happened in Chicago, not Miami. How close were we really were to that?
Can you believe it was 10 years ago, basically this week, that this all went down, this month or, coming up? It's crazy. So when I went back and looked at this, I really didn't completely comprehend. It's been talked about in bits and pieces over the last decade, but I didn't comprehend really how close this was to maybe going to Chicago. And the key was that the Heat had prepared to open up three spots. That was revolutionary. Now we see big threes all over the place, but back then, the idea to sign all three of these guys was not what anybody was thinking, and the Bulls weren't thinking that. They were thinking two. But can you imagine if they had been able to do this, what their starting lineup would have been? Dwayne Wade came to them and asked them, hey, can you open up a third spot? And they tried. They tried to trade Luol Deng. And if they'd been able to pull it off, it would have been Derrick Rose at point guard, Dwayne Wade at shooting guard, LeBron James at small forward, Chris Bosh at power forward, and Joakim Noah at center.
Oh, wow.
That Bulls team, with just two of those five guys, won 60 games the next year anyway. The Heat went to the finals, obviously, the next 4 years. They weren't able to open the spot, at the end of the day, three was greater than two. But what a near miss for Chicago. We'll never know how close it actually was.
Wow. Let me tell you something. If they were able to pull that off, I think I just would have retired. You're talking about a young Derrick Rose, MVP with LeBron James, D-Wade, and Chris Bosh? That would have been the dynasty. They'd be still talking about that team would be still playing today. I mean, come on now. That wouldn't have been fair. I mean, they would have had to rewrite league rules. Collective bargaining agreement would have to change. I couldn't even imagine a team with Derrick Rose, D-Wade, LeBron.
They already did that, Paul. They did rewrite the rules when the Heat did it. It happened anyway.
Oh my god, it happened anyway, right?
But that then they had to rewrite too. Them again after Kevin Durant went to the Warriors and creating all the Supermax and all of this stuff. And you know what all the lesson is? You can't stop these guys if they want to play together. Paul, I think about all those great Heat Celtic moments that we got in the ensuing years, so I'm glad you didn't retire. I am sorry for all of the Chicago Bulls fans out there who had to just hear Brian talk for five minutes about what they never got to have. Coming up, Paul, your time is not done. We're going to take a stroll down memory lane in the latest installment of the Jump's When Did You Know series. But first, here's our distant replay from this date in 1993 featuring a blockbuster trade on draft night. And here is the late, great David Stern with the announcement. Listen to the crowd here.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to report a trade. Orlando has traded the draft rights to Chris Webber to Golden State. In exchange for the draft rights to Anthony Hardaway and three future first round draft picks.
We'd be in the playoffs instantly with Webber. Now, it's going to take us a couple of years. We need a power forward.
He could be a good player, but we need someone to work with Shaquille O'Neal. If we can have Shaquille and Webber down low, we would be rooting.
I want to be the number one pick.
James is waiting for him. Pierce crosses over.
As a kid, when you start getting better in basketball, as I got older, because I was like a late bloomer. So like around 11th, 12th grader, when I started to be one of the best players in the country, I remember my high school coach telling me, like, you could be in the NBA if you work. And I was like, you think so? Definitely. He said, I don't say this to a lot of players. I've only said it to one other player, and he wound up going to the NBA, Harold Miner. But you could be that next. Bam, it got stuck in my head. Like, man, I could be in the league. That became the new dream. I'm trying to get to the league now. And he just engraved that, installed that in my head, and that was the drive. When did I believe I can make it? Probably after my freshman year in college. You know, I was one of the top freshmen in the country and really had a solid year, played for a top program, was number one in the country for most of the year. It was just like, you know what? I can make it in the league. You know, I think I'm going to be one of the best players in the country.
The So in my freshman year, I'm one of the top freshmen in the country. And I see a couple of my peers, they enter the draft after their freshman year, Stephon Marbury and Sharif Abdul-Rahim. And I'm like, you know, that doesn't happen. Guys don't leave after their freshman year. Usually leaving early when I came, I was leaving after your junior year. And so I was like, this is going to happen for me because I felt like I was better fit for the league than them. Now going into my sophomore year, I'm on the cover of Sports Illustrated, like going to be a sophomore. And so I'm like, man, not only did I think I can make the league, I want to be the number one pick. Shoot, I know I can make it. I mean, I know I can make it. I'm driving for number one now.
The Boston Celtics select Paul Pierce from the University of Kansas.
Paul Pierce sitting in the green room back there a little longer than a lot of folks thought he would be.
So when I got drafted, I expected it. I already mentally prepared myself for it. I worked for it. You know, going into the draft, I'm projected to go number two. I could have left after my sophomore year. I was projected to go between 6 and 15. That's what coaches and the scouts were saying. And I was like, you know, I already know I can make it. I could be a lottery pick maybe or right outside the lottery. I was like, I want number one. I'm coming back to school. I got more to prove. I'm going to be the number one pick. You know, people who follow me know my story. I ended up number 10 pick. Still in the lottery, but I expected to be there. I expected to be in the lottery. I expected to be in the green room. I watched the lottery every year. I was like, I'm going to be in that room. I want to be the top pick. I'm going to stand on that stage and shake David Stern's hand.
Paul Pierce. Overtime at New York. Pierce down inside, lays it up and in.
Once I got out there, I hit the ground running. I was motivated. I had a lot to prove. I wanted to be one of the best. You know, I know I'm a stick now, so whether it's a question is, do you want to be good, average, or do you want to be great? You know, I wanted to be great. Do you want to be an all-star? Do you want to be an MVP? Do you want to be a champion?
That video is so much fun. Paul, do you think now, if you had left after your freshman year, the way you were contemplating, that you would have hit the ground running in the NBA like you did after leaving your junior year?
No, I don't think so. I think when I look at the whole situation from freshman year to sophomore year, I just wasn't ready mentally and physically. You know, I was enjoying college. I was still enjoying being a kid. And, you know, I knew I could have probably left my sophomore year. But like I said, I had more to prove. I wanted to win a national championship. I wanted to be the number one pick. And like I said before, I just wasn't mentally ready or I felt like I wasn't physically ready at the time also. You know, I wasn't just looking at the big dollars and, you know, trying to accomplish the dream of making it to the NBA. I wanted to make sure I was ready. And I wanted to make sure that when I got drafted, I was ready to go in right away, be a starter and be a prime time player right from the start. And that's why I left my junior year.
You hear that, Brian? He had more to do in college.
I think it might have worked out.
Yes, absolutely. All right, guys, let's move on to today's NBA. I want to talk about Miami and Indiana, currently two games apart in the East, and they're going to play each other twice in Orlando when the season resumes. So why is this interesting? Well, the last time they played on January 8th, Jimmy Butler and TJ Warren had a testy confrontation, earning Warren an ejection. Both teams' social media accounts did not forget. When the new schedule was released, the Heat tweeted, "Definitely ready," to which the Pacers responded, "See you soon." Oh, and here's a little reminder of how Jimmy Butler felt after their last matchup. Listen to this.
I think it's tough for him because I can guard him and he can't guard me. Like, at the end of the day, that's what it comes down to. But like I said, I think you just got to watch your mouth in certain situations. There's some that you just don't say as a man. And, I mean, he got to see me the next time because I feel like what he said was truly disrespectful. And it's all good because we see him again. I ain't scared of nobody. So, you know, he talking about, oh, we're going to fight this, that. It is what it is to me.
And then what did you notice the middle finger from him and was the blowing of the kiss
soft? He's soft. He's not even in my league, like nowhere near me. And if I was their coach, I would never put him on me ever again. He's like, no, put somebody else on me because I'm a tad up every time we play. He's trash.
It's like Olympic level trash talk from Jimmy Butler. Dwayne Wade only needed one emoji to tweet his excitement. The popcorn is ready. Paul, do you expect the next Heat Pacers matchup to have that same level of trash talk in August that it did back in January?
You know, Rach, it might have that same level of trash talk, but I'm really not that interested in a Jimmy Butler, TJ Warren matchup. I mean, like, I'm saying though, Jimmy Butler.
We have
Butler
not had sports in 4 months. Give me
a
this.
Superstar. I mean, think about it. This ain't the same. This not going to have the same. I didn't even remember until we played it. You know, it's not the same as Jimmy Butler getting into it with like a Bradley Beal. You know, it's not the same or even a Jason Tatum. Then it'd be like, okay, you got two stars going at it, talking mess. That I'm interested in this. Jimmy Butler clearly said he's not in his stratosphere. TJ Warren, very good player. He's made a name for himself. But like I said, I forgot that he even had beef.
Damn.
If it had been one of these other players, I would have been looking forward to it. You know, this is going to be swept under the rug. I'm sure Jimmy Butler's not even interested. I would tell Kevin Garnett this. Listen to this. It would be like players that would talk trash to him. Kevin would talk back. And I'd be like, Kevin, leave him alone, dude. He's not even in your stratosphere. Save that for somebody else like Tim Duncan. You know, save some of this trash talk. Come on now.
Man. That is harsh.
Right?
Harsh. You know, this actually goes back to
I'm just
December.
Saying, no.
They had a little tussle in December. I will say this, Paul. I'll give you this. The ball's in T.J. Warren's court. Because, yeah, Jimmy Butler's an all-star. Jimmy Butler's a max player. T.J. Warren is not. So, if this is going to become a rivalry, T.J. Warren has got to step back to it. Otherwise, Jimmy Butler is going to be proven correct. So, that's what I want to see. But I'll watch to see how T.J. handles it, for sure.
Well, look, you guys, I mentioned Adam Silver talking in the Time 100 earlier today. He was also asked about trash talk, and he said that players may have to adapt their language a bit, knowing that they are going to be picked up by all the microphones now. The idea, of course, there's no fans in the stands to cover them. I was amused at the idea that players in the moment would, quote, adapt their language a bit, not the guys that I've covered all these years. Adam did sort of account for that also because he acknowledged we may have to put these games on a little bit of delay. I would advise Adam Silver that you put Pacers Heat on a little bit of a delay, at least the first one. That's all I'm saying. Paul, do not take away my fun. I do want to talk about the 8 NBA teams not included in the bubble because some of them are still pursuing ways to keep their teams active, from mini camps to joint practices to actual televised games, reportedly at a second site. These are all just ideas so far. The franchises are trying to avoid what would be nearly a 9-month stretch, 9 months from their last game in March to the 2021 planned start in December, and even that is just hopeful that they start then. But Players Association Executive Director Michelle Roberts has voiced concerns about a second site. She said on Friday, quote, "Candidly, while I appreciate that there will be a bit of a layoff for those teams, I think there are some things these teams can do for guys that are not playing. But nothing could replicate in every way the protocol that's been established for Orlando. So never say never, but there is a standard. There's a standard that's got to be met. And if it's not met, next question, as far as I'm concerned." So, Brian, that was pretty strong. Is there a feasible way for those 8 teams to interact during this pandemic? And actually, maybe should I say 7 teams? Because it doesn't seem the Warriors are that interested.
Or the Knicks, quite frankly. So I think they can interact with themselves, but not with others, because they're dreaming of getting together and playing games, whether it's in a secondary bubble or whether it's just, you know, 2 teams getting together. And I just don't think that's going to happen. Michelle Roberts said she wanted to have the same level of protection as the players have in Orlando. This is something I don't think everybody understands. The Orlando bubble is costing the NBA more than $150 million, more than $1.5 million a day to put on, not to mention all the lost revenue they have from not being able to sell tickets. Frankly, no one's going to pay for the other 8 teams. Not saying that they don't have a point, but I think it's probably going to have to be gatherings with themselves at their own facilities, not inter-team play.
Listen, all these teams, they could create their bubble at UCLA this summer and play as many pickup games as they want. We don't have to watch this. I have no interest in watching Detroit, Cleveland, Minnesota.
Paul is judgy today.
You guys can call each other up. You guys have Instagram. You guys have each other's numbers. You guys can meet at the gym. And if you guys want to play against each other, that's fine. Do it in the privacy of a pickup game at UCLA, because I am not interested in watching these teams.
This is what happens, I guess, when you're a finals MVP. You just hold your nose at anything that is not on your level. I'm thrilled you've joined. You've graced me and Brian today, Paul. Thank you very much. I do think, Paul, your point
goodness,
is well
please,
taken.
Save me this.
I think that is all they are going to get. All right, coming up, a former MVP is losing weight and hanging with a little baby. But will a four-month layoff lead to a rested James Harden or a rusty James Harden? You're watching The Jump. That's coming up next. Coming up next is 20 minutes of Jalen and Jacoby, highly questionable and around the horn. SportsCenter is at 5 with the PTI guys joining the show at 5:30, and we cap the day with SVP right after Tom Rank Boston. All right, guys, yesterday we debuted a new series here at The Jump. We're going to be taking a bunch of teams that are competing in Orlando and catching you up with where they are, since it's been so very, very long since you've seen them on the court. It's basically like when your favorite TV show comes back from hiatus. Last time we covered the Sixers, and today we're going to continue with the latest, the Houston Rockets.
Giannis Antetokounmpo makes a joke on the air about, I want to take someone who can pass. No one wants to take James Harden. He's a dribbler.
But I wish I could just run and with 7 feet and run and just dunk. Like, that takes no skill at all.
The Houston Rockets have been up and down all season.
They have centers, then they don't have centers. They're running pick and roll. Now they run no pick and roll.
The team that won championships with Hakeem Olajuwon is now officially the epicenter of small ball.
It's going to be potentially good for Harden. I don't know if they checked with P.J. Tucker. He's already really worn down, and he's going to get worn down more.
This is how they're taking it. Beefy Harden was averaging 36, so I don't even know what skinny Harden is going to do. Micro Ball is letting James Harden and Russell Westbrook be their best selves.
They are on the sun.
If they can sustain an off James Harden night, maybe that means they can sustain enough to win in the playoffs.
You got two guys that are capable of giving you a 40-piece wing dinner. That's dangerous.
I'll believe it when we see it.
They have to prove to the basketball world that their style of play is going to work.
How confident are you that the path you're on now can lead to a title this year?
I'm very, very confident. Extremely confident.
Man, of all the things I miss Russell Westbrook's trash talk. James Harden has made the most of his midseason hiatus. He was seen cruising around in a Lamborghini alongside some friends, including rapper Lil Baby. And as we just saw, he's also used this time to train and lose weight. Now, wait for it. Despite driving Lambos, Harden has been criticized for running out of gas in the playoffs in recent years. Okay. He's at or near the top of the league in minutes, shot attempts, usage, and unassisted field goals. So, Paul, how do you think this long layoff will impact what we see on the court from James Harden come playoff time?
I think it's really going to benefit him greatly. I mean, you talk about a guy, like you said, you know, he's up there in usage rates, been up there for the last few years at the top, minutes per game. And you got to remember, he leads the league. He's in the top league leaders in free throws attempts every year. So he's taking a pounding each and every night. And so, you know, with this long layoff, with him getting his body fit, dropping the pounds, getting this rest, I see it really, really benefiting him in the long run, especially with his style of play.
Well, the first thing I want to say about James Harden is, you know, he has asthma. He's talked about this in the past, and asthma is a risk factor for COVID. So he has to be very diligent and very careful with this, and I'm sure he's very well aware of that. So the fact that he got in better shape and is still, going for this says a lot about his competitiveness. And the one thing I'll say about the Houston Rockets is that they constantly reinvent themselves. It's maybe the best thing you can say about their organization from top to bottom. They reinvented themselves midway through this last season. So seeing James Harden drop weight, especially since his role can, change considerably, from the start of the season to when we stopped, with Russell Westbrook taking more of a central role, we could see a different style of James Harden, a little bit different style even of their small ball. So they're one of the most fascinating teams, and this time off benefits them a lot because they were getting worn down. This will recharge them for a quick, fast run, And I'm definitely going to be watching them closely when we get to Orlando.
I mean, it's so interesting. I've always thought that James Harden's size, especially once he slid into that point guard position, it was an advantage for him, right? So I'm curious what a thinner guy, a guy who's easier to knock around, I'm interested to see how that goes for him. But there is no doubt that the rest is going to be the main factor. And for guys like him, guys like LeBron James, who maybe put their foot on the gas during the regular season, and we were like, well, we'll see if all this playing defense makes a difference come with your energy come playoff time. That's no longer a factor. And then, of course, on the other side, all that saving of energy that the Bucks did with Giannis Antetokounmpo, not really a factor right now anymore either. Everything has changed. Now, the Rockets are currently the sixth seed, but they have 8 games to play. And get this, they're only 2.5 games back of the third seed. Beyond James Harden, you've got Russell Westbrook also having time to rest and get healthy during this league suspension. So, Brian, are the Rockets a dark horse to make a deep playoff run, considering everything we've just talked about?
Yeah, it's not just about the Rockets, Rachel. It's what we don't know about the teams around them in the West. You know, the Jazz have taken some hits here. You know, Rudy Gobert said he's not fully recovered yet. Bojan Bogdanovic isn't coming back. You know, so some of the teams in front of them may not be the same. And we also don't know how Nikola Jokic is going to come back and where they all might fall in the seeding. Let me tell you this. What I'm rooting for, I want to see the Rockets get their way to the number 4 seed, because I would love to see a second round playoff series, Lakers, Rockets. I think that would be great basketball, very entertaining, and an example of why the West is going to be so hard to win.
I think they're one of the biggest wild cards, and I'll tell you why. I mean, when you got MVP caliber players and Russell Westbrook and James Harden, there's only one team in the Western Conference that can say that, and that's the Lakers with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. So when you got that type of talent on one team, regardless of your role players, if you got guys who can get hot on any given night, you know, they're such a wild card. And then their style of play, how they continue to reinvent themselves. This can be really beneficial to them, especially when there's no home court advantage. You know, they don't have to worry about the road, no crowds to be involved. You're going to use Russell Westbrook for your energy, a guy who's going to get them up every night, get them motivated. You know, usually when you have a home crowd or a road crowd who's going to cheer or boo you, you got a guy who can motivate guys there on the court each and every night. So, you know, it's a flip of the coin with the Rockets. They can lose to anybody, but they can beat anybody, too.
Well, Paul, look, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George might want to talk to you after the show about saying it's only the Lakers that have two big stars like that. And I think Daryl Morey is going to want to talk to our producers about even implying that they could be a dark horse to meet late in the playoffs.
MVP in this league.
That's true. That's true. All right. Coming up, guys, Damian Lillard, NBA 2K21 cover athlete. Paul is going to explain the significance of this honor when the jump returns. Crunch time here on The Jump. All right, guys, for the first time in more than 3 months, NBA point spreads are back on the board at Las Vegas Sportsbooks. The big Clippers-Lakers game scheduled for July 30th opened at a pick'em over the weekend. A senior odds maker at Caesars told ESPN's David Purdom, quote, "We don't know who's in shape. We don't know what players are going to bail out. You just don't have a lot of things to throw in there," which is amazing. Paul, would you have any confidence betting on games right now?
Absolutely not. Like you said, I don't know who's going to get hurt. I don't know who's going to be in the bubble, out the bubble at this point. If the line is set today, I don't know what to do. Not that I never betted on an NBA game, and I definitely would, especially not today, especially with all the things that's going on. It's too unpredictable. I don't know who's in, who's out.
I love that they basically set the line at Pick'em and said, "We don't know who's going to win. Just give us your money." All right, let's talk about Dame time, because he is going virtual as the Blazers star guard named today as the first cover athlete for NBA 2K21. There's going to be 3 cover athletes this year, so Dame will be in elite company. Paul, as a former video game cover athlete yourself 18 years ago, what does this honor mean for Lillard?
Man, that's the ultimate feeling. You know you made it if you're on a video game, because you know millions of kids around the world are going to buy that game with you on the cover. It's an awesome feeling. I mean, you've reached superstar status once you become on the cover of a video game. I still have the cover of my NBA Drive in my trophy case today.
Lillard's made it, right, Brian?
Yep. Yeah, Paul had that nice mid-range game, even in the video games. Now, I'm not a gamer today, But if I was, I would pick Damian Lillard to play with because he must be awesome. I'll bet he's got range out to 35 feet. I'd love to play with him on any game.
Absolutely. All right. The NBA and its franchises are starting to reveal more actions this week in support of players and the community in Atlanta. The Hawks and Fulton County are turning State Farm Arena into Georgia's largest ever polling station for both the state's runoff election on August 11th and the general election in November. This is so huge. Remember the long lines of people being forced to wait hours to vote in Atlanta? This idea was developed by head coach Lloyd Pierce, CEO Steve Koonin, and the majority owner Anthony Ressler. This is really impressive. Plus, Ramona Shelburne and Zach Lowe are reporting the NBA and the Players Association are all planning to paint Black Lives Matter on all courts when play resumes in Orlando next month. The WNBA also discussing doing the same when they return to play. Paul, what is the significance to you of seeing Black Lives Matter on an NBA court?
It just shows, you know, the willingness of the league, Adam Silver, of tackling social injustice issues head on first and allowing the league, the players, to voice their opinion. Putting Black Lives Matter on the center court is amazing. And players had the question, how are we going to be able to express our social issues when we come back into the bubble of the NBA? Here is one way. Every night that you play on this court, you will see the wording, Black Lives Matter. Guys are going to have T-shirts that say certain things about their social injustice differences, stuff with their shoes, what they wear into the arena. This is amazing. I'm glad that David Stern is the pioneer in all of this for all leagues to watch.
Yeah, I think the messaging obviously is very important here, but the action is really what's going to create serious change. And the action that the Hawks organization and the officials in Fulton County, Georgia took is exactly what these guys are hoping the messaging leads to. We've seen LeBron James and several other current players like Draymond Green and even our colleague here, Kendrick Perkins, focus on voting issues and dealing with potential voter suppression. And this is exactly the type of things that they're hoping what is said and displayed in Orlando leads to. It's a tremendous step, and I expect the players to continue to push for these types of things, whether or not it happens in the bubble, on their social media accounts, or after the season.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this a little bit on the show yesterday. You don't want just the symbols to happen, right? You don't want just the painting of the court. You need action. You need things like more voting polls opened in players for African-American communities. You need those kinds of real things happening. But the symbols do matter some, and we know that they matter because the people on the other side who want to hold on to things like the Confederate flag or some of those statues are fighting so hard to hold on to them. And I think when, Paul, the NBA paints Black Lives Matter on the court, doesn't it just make it clear to you this is who we stand with?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, I continue to take my hat off to Adam Silver just for allowing these things to happen. I mean they're tackling it head on. You know, they're using their platform. The players have this huge platform moving forward for the next 3 months. I applaud this greatly.
Awesome. Very, very cool. Well, before we go, we want to wish the best to the NBA's Senior Vice President of Referee Operations, Joe Borgia. He's retiring after a 32-year NBA career. Paul, you know Joe well. He is a credit to the game. We certainly appreciate all of his efforts.
Yeah, I probably got a few technicals from this guy. He probably cost me about 25 points on being the league leaders in all-time points.